You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of This Week in History. Welcome back to part 3 of Henry VIII's Wives, and believe it or not, we're talking about the third wife today. Now, probably goes down in history as one of the more successful queens of Henry VIII. She was certainly more loved by Henry than the other five, and she was the only one to produce a legitimate heir, a male heir, so to speak. So, who are we talking about today, and why was she Henry VIII's favourite queen? So we're talking about Jane Seymour, for those of you who haven't caught on yet. Now, Jane Seymour was Henry VIII's third wife and queen, and she was married for just under a year and a half. Jane is best known for basically being the mother of Edward VI, Henry's son and heir, Henry's long-awaited son and heir. And she actually died 12 days after giving birth to Edward at Hampton Court Palace. Now, if you're a bit of a paranormal fan, I am a bit funny with paranormal stuff. Some of it I do believe, some I don't, but there is a very compelling video of Hampton Court Palace where you can see a lady dressed in Tudor clothing open a door in the middle of the night. There's no one in the palace. It's on CCTV. It's on YouTube. And they do believe this was Jane Seymour opening and closing one of the doors. So have a look for it. It's quite compelling. It's a decent video, and there's not... Yeah, anyway, moving on. So, some historians have cast Jane as a passive, sort of knuckled under wife. You know, she's a demure figure. I mean, that may be true, but I think it's more to do with the fact that the previous two wives, Catherine of Aragon, very outspoken, very Catholic, wanted to stay by the church. Anne Boleyn, again, very dramatic, very boisterous, so to speak. And then you've got Jane Seymour, who was not necessarily like that. Whether she was passive is yet to be determined, but she was definitely not as in your face as the two previous wives. But she had, like Anne Boleyn, a dramatic rise to become Queen of England. She was actually lady-in-waiting to Anne Boleyn. So this suggests that there's a little bit more to her than what we think. Was she this quiet person, you know, a bit solemn, a bit quiet, a bit in the background sort of thing? Or was she a bit more promiscuous than what we actually give her credit for? Because she's gone from lady-in-waiting to Anne Boleyn to basically Queen of England within a matter of months. And you don't get like that if you're this quiet, shy, meek little girl, which is what which a lot of historians do portray her as. I don't necessarily believe that's right. I think she fell in love with the king and she did everything in her power to get what she wanted. Jane's short time as queen is often translating as a glimpse into the woman behind the king and the legitimate son that survived. So there's not a huge amount we know about her on the basis that she wasn't really around for very long. You know, she sort of had a dramatic rise from lady-in-waiting to Queen of England to Queen Mother or Mother of the Prince to dying within 12 days of giving birth. You know, there's not a lot to know about her. I mean, just for example, she was born around 1508 to 1509. We don't even know her date of birth. She was the eldest daughter of Marjorie Wentworth and Sir John Seymour. Though her family were respectable lower gentry, Jane's mother was actually a descendant from King Edward III and related to two of Henry VIII's queens, Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard, who we'll talk about later. We know very little about Jane's early life. Like I said, she was one of 10 children. She spent most of her childhood at Wolf Hall in Wiltshire, and she learned to read and write and was taught needlework and basic household management. Essentially, all the skills that she'd need to become an English noblewoman. That's pretty much all we know. You know, there's not that much. You know, one of 10 children, minor nobility. Yeah, okay, her mum's related to a king a few years before, but majority of the nobles in England were related to the royal family one way or another. That's kind of how they got to the position they were in. So, not much. Don't know much about her. What we do know comes from when she arrives at the court of Henry VIII. And she arrived at court around 1529. So she's 19, 20 years old at this point, or 20, 21 years old. Between 19 and 21, we're not sure. And she entered the service of Catherine of Aragon, Henry VIII's first queen, as lady-in-waiting. Jane spent her time with other women in Catherine's entourage, entertaining and attending the queen's needs. If you don't know what this is, if you've seen Game of Thrones, it's essentially the handmaiden. If you watch Game of Thrones, it's the handmaiden. This was a turbulent time for the royal household. Henry was desperate for a male heir, but the royal couple only had one surviving child, Princess Mary. Henry wanted to divorce Catherine and marry Anne Boleyn, which we spoke about in the previous episodes, another one of the Queen's ladies-in-waiting. And Henry hoped that Anne would give him a son. As we know, she didn't. She just gave him another daughter. So, what happened to Jane Seymour during Queen Anne's reign? Now, by 1531, Jane was already swept up in the royal drama, everything that was going on. Henry broke ties with the Catholic Church, banished Catherine from court, married Anne in 1533, and Jane found her place in her household. The new Queen Anne was outspoken and put herself at the centre of Henry's religious reforms, and as one of her ladies, Jane would have to put aside her own beliefs as well as any loyalty that she had to the previous queen. Now, Jane may have been with Anne as she prepared to give birth to her daughter Elizabeth, but again, we don't know. That was September 1533. And it's likely that she was there for every other, say, miscarriage or mishap or stillbirth that Anne went through. Again, we don't know a huge amount because there wasn't much written about handmaidens at the time. The only handmaidens we really know about are the ones that exceeded their station later in life, like Anne Boleyn and like Jane Seymour. Now, it's not clear when Jane Seymour first caught Henry's eye, but in 1534, the Spanish ambassador Eustache Chopin described an affair between the king and an unnamed woman in Anne's household. Some historians believe that this might have been Jane Seymour, however, the lady's identity remains unknown. And what we know about King Henry VIII, he was a bit of a player. Might not have been her, but there was rumours circulating in 1534 that the king was having an affair with another woman. In 1535, Henry and Anne visited the Seymour household at Walthall, but we don't know if Jane was present. It is difficult to say how Jane felt about Henry or the possibility of becoming queen, because there's not much written down. Nonetheless, conservative figures at court would come to recognise Henry's interest in her and help place Jane before the king. Now, in 1536, the royal relationship had grown stormy. This is the relationship between Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. And in January, Anne experienced a miscarriage, one of at least two since the birth of Princess Elizabeth. This time, the child was a boy. Henry's eyes continued to wander. Seeing discord, many at court conspired to remove Anne from power. And this included Henry's chief minister and Anne's former ally, Thomas Cromwell. Now, I will do an episode on Thomas Cromwell because he's a very, very fascinating figure in the Tudor courts. He's very, very good. There's a lot about him that's worth looking at. Now, in March 1536, the king sent Jane a letter, along with a generous purse of gold sovereigns as tokens of his affection. So we now know, 3 years after the rumoured affair, that Henry has pretty much cemented in his place with Jane Seymour. However, Jane refused the gift, kissing Henry's unopened letter and asking the messenger to return it. According to Chaupay, Jane replied that she could not accept the letter as there was no treasure in the world that she valued as much as her honour. If the king wanted to send another gift, she might wait until some time, as God would be pleased to send her some advantageous marriage. So, this throws doubt onto the affair as to whether it was Jane, or whether Jane was doing this in a way of saying, well, it can't have been me, you know, sort of taking herself out of that situation. It definitely wasn't me, see, I didn't even open his letter. Or it wasn't Jane that he was having an affair with, but he does like her, and she has removed herself from the situation and basically said to the king, look, if you want me, you've got to marry me. You're not getting this. I'm not going to be a side chick. I am going to be the whole thing or nothing. Now, this was actually a very clever move by Jane. Anne Boleyn also refused the king's affections back at the start, and this made Henry obsessed with Anne Boleyn. So she's thinking, well, if I refuse it and knock him back, maybe it'll be the same thing. Very clever, and it worked. Impressed by Jane's modesty, Henry moved her elder brother, Edward Seymour, into Thomas Cromwell's apartments at Greenwich Palace. This way, Edward could act as his sister's chaperone, ensuring her honour when the king came to visit. Historians argue how far Jane was truly concerned with her honour, or was she protecting her virtue or holding out for a chance to be queen? Now, it depends how you look at Jane Seymour. If you look at her as the woman who, how history sort of portrayed her, the only queen that he ever loved, the only queen that he really wanted to be with, I would say that she was holding out to be his wife. However, there's a bit more of a snidey way of looking at it is, if Henry wasn't going to be her husband, then she's holding out so she's not left I try to think of a nice way of putting it, but spoilt, essentially. The way it was looked at is any woman who had been with a man previously was classed as spoilt. So, yeah, if she slept with Henry, she probably wouldn't get a match later down the line. So there's two ways of looking at it. She was either very crafty and very clever, or she actually really loved the king. So the real question now is, why did Henry VIII actually want to marry Jane Seymour? Now, Jane, like we know, has become known as quiet, chaste, and above all, quite an obedient queen. After the years of passionate romance and how vicious quarrels with Anne were separating Henry, perhaps Henry was looking for a simpler, more domestic life in which he viewed he had a more compliant wife. Added to that, the king needed an heir. The two daughters that he had were not substantial enough to cement the Tudor dynasty. Jane was one of 10 children. Some historians note that the Seymours had a reputation for fertility. Above all, the 45-year-old Henry now was looking for a wife who would give him more children, not at least a son and an heir. Jane may have seemed like the perfect candidate. She's from a decent family. She's well stocked. There's a lot of potential to have multiple children because of her family history. And added to that, she's a bit more docile and a bit more obedient than the two queens that he's already had. Seems like a good idea. So what does he do? Well, as we know from the previous episode, he cuts Anne Boleyn's head off. Now, she was executed on charges of treason and adultery. Probably false, but nonetheless, that's what happened. And Jane and Henry were engaged the next day. So he didn't really wait. Less than 2 weeks later, on the 30th of May, 1536, Jane Seymour and Henry VIII were married in a Queen's Closet at Whitehall Palace. Queen's Closet is a room. It's not an actual closet, just for those of you who who are imagining the King of England getting married in a wardrobe. That's not exactly what happened. Despite Anne's unpopularity, Jane's rapid rise to power still attracted some muttering at court. Nonetheless, on the 7th of June, 1536, Jane and Henry processed down the Thames from Greenwich to Whitehall, passing the Tower of London, where a few weeks previously his ex-wife had been murdered, or executed, to a lavish royal pageant, which introduced the country to their new queen. Now, there was actually a cup that was designed for this. It was an ornate cup for Jane Seymour. It was actually created by Hans Holbein, which some of you may have heard of. Quite a famous artist at the time. And this was in 1536. This cup was decorated with the king and the queen's initials, which are entwined with knots, along with the queen's motto for her family, which is obey and serve. This treasure is actually at the British Museum. Or at least the drawing of it is. I don't believe the cup actually exists anymore. But the original drawing of this cup is at the British Museum. So, again, that just adds to it. I mean, her family motto, obey and serve. I mean, that pretty much tells you quite a lot about the woman. Jane Seymour was a very, very different queen to Anne Boleyn and Catherine of Aragon as well. Having witnessed the downfall of two queens, she wisely chose the motto, bound to obey and serve. So, it just says a lot about her character. She's basically saying, this is me, this is who I am, and I will be there. I want to be the final queen. Not just another queen, the final queen. A lot of historians believe, had she not have died, she would have been the last queen. She presented herself as quiet and pious, who generally distanced herself from court politics. And there is evidence of another side to Jane, however. Jane actually appealed to Henry for a pilgrimage. Now, it's called a Pilgrimage of Grace, and in October 1536, the Pilgrimage of Grace swept across the north of England. A popular uprising that challenged Henry VIII's religious reforms. So, she appealed to Henry's better nature during this. This included the dissolution of monasteries where the king closed religion.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Just houses, seized church lands, and basically stole everything that he could from any Catholics that were around to pretty much put in his own back pocket. According to the French ambassador, Jane allegedly begged Henry to restore the abbeys, a bold plea that may reveal more about her conservative religious views. Jane was quickly shut down. Henry warned her to stop interfering, grumbling that he had often told her not to meddle in with his affairs. Chillingly, the king also told her, "Remember what happened to the last queen." So she shut up and carried on. Kind of understandably, really. You know, there was no way she's going to win this argument. But it does show that, I believe, I mean, they historians put this down as she was a bit more conservative in her religious views. I would say she was a bit more conservative in the way that she viewed the English people. So I don't necessarily put this down to a religious thing. I think she looked at the situation, looked at the fact that this could escalate quite drastically with, you know, revolts that we'd had in the country previously. I think she looked at it and thought, actually, this might not be a good move politically. I don't think it was necessarily a religious feeling, but I am only one historian and probably outnumbered here. As a queen, Jane took strict control of her household. While her predecessors favoured French fashions and customs, Jane instructed her ladies to wear traditional English wear. Jane wore a gable hood, which is in her iconic portrait. If anyone looks at her, if anyone has seen a picture of her, it's almost like a cone, but on the back of her head is probably the best way of putting it. It's not it's not very fashionable, but it was English, and the court under Anne Boleyn was very French and very modern, and she wanted to go back to being English. So if you have a look at probably the most famous painting of her, again, guess who it was done by? Hans Holbein. And this was done, again, sometime between 1536 and 1537. It also captures something on Jane's wardrobe. On becoming queen, Henry gifted Jane rich fabrics to befit her new station. Depicted in lush red and glittered jewels, this portrait shows how a relatively obscure noblewoman established her image as a Tudor queen. On her marriage, Jane became stepmother to Henry's two daughters, Mary and Elizabeth. Now, she had very little to do with the infant Elizabeth, who was generally kept away from court, but she did become very close with Mary, who hoped to reconcile with her father and even be restored to the line of succession. Because at that time, although Henry did have two daughters, they were not going to become queens. They were the only kids he had. They were not going to become queens. It would have gone to the next male heir in the Tudor line. They would have probably gone to Henry's father and then his siblings and then gone that way. So it would have been one of Henry's cousins, maybe, would have ended up king after Henry. It would not have gone to Mary. So she wanted to be put in as the first Queen of England, and she wanted to be restored to that line. Henry could have done that. Henry could have said, that's my heir, she's the next queen, she will rule England after me. But he didn't. The queen encouraged Henry to reach out to his daughter, perhaps out of respect to Mary's mother and Jane's former mistress, Catherine of Aragon. But again, Henry warned Jane to stop interfering. Ever tactful, Jane replied she was only interested in the king, his kingdom, and their future children. Despite Jane's efforts, Henry did not install Mary as his heir. However, he did welcome her back to court, reuniting with her father in July 1536. Mary also received a diamond jewel from her new stepmother, a token that reflected the warm, friendly relationship to come. Now, he was promised an heir when he married Jane Seymour. And as human beings now know, it's not always possible to produce a male heir just because you say you're going to. So the pressure of having a son weighed heavily on Jane. And with both previous queens now dead, no one could deny the legitimacy of Jane's marriage to Henry or their future children. So any children that she did have would be the next heirs to the throne. Furthermore, Henry Fitzroy, Henry VIII's recognised illegitimate son, who some had expected to be named heir to the throne, he actually died in 1536. So now, more than ever, the royal couple needed to settle the country's future. Later that year, the king proclaimed a new act of succession, which confirmed that Mary and Elizabeth were illegitimate. The act also accounted for children produced by any future queen, meaning that, essentially, in Henry's eyes, this marriage was the only marriage that counted. If he died, or if Jane died and he was to remarry and have other children, it doesn't matter. This was the marriage where the royal line would come from. That's what it was written down. So, must have been quite a good thought for Jane to know that her family was secure. But good news came in March 1537 when Jane found out she was pregnant. Astrologers predicted, as they had many times before, that the baby would be a boy. Funny that, the king wants a boy, the astrologers predict he's going to have a boy. Funny, almost like they're doing it just because it's the king. However, this time, they were right. Jane passed most of her pregnancy without issues. She ate fat quails and cucumbers that were sent to her by her stepdaughter Mary. And on the 16th of May, 1537, at Hampton Court Palace, she began her confinement, or lying in, a period of isolation that started shortly before giving birth. Henry had recently ordered updates to the new queen's apartments, as well as a suite for his new child, but the new apartments were probably not complete by the time that Jane had entered. Jane likely stayed in this room overlooking the clock court, and Jane's chamber would have been hung with thick fabric and tapestries, window covered to let in a small amount of light, and traditionally only women were allowed inside. Jane also was attended by Sir William Butts, which was Henry's most trusted doctor. Jane's labour lasted 2 days and three nights. At a time when childbirth so often resulted in death, there was no doubt an exhausting and frightening ordeal for her. It's commonly thought that Jane gave birth via a caesarean section, but this is unlikely. In the Tudor age, these procedures were extremely dangerous, and usually only performed when the mother was likely to die. Although her labour was long and hard, Jane's attendants were confident that she would survive. On the 12th of October 1537, around 2 a.m, Jane gave birth to a boy, the future Edward VI. She had delivered Henry, a son and heir. On the 15th of September 1537, Prince Edward was carried into Hampton Court's Royal Chapel for his christening. The lavish ceremony was attended by Edward's half-sisters, Mary and Elizabeth, and with Mary serving as his godmother. The chapel was even fitted with a raised octagonal font so that England could see their future king. Tradition dictates that neither Jane nor Henry attended the christening. However, after the service, Prince Edward was carried back to the private apartments where a triumphant Jane sat up in bed to receive her son. This joy would not last. The Queen seemed to recover well from the birth at first, and plans were in motion for her churching, a ceremony to allow her out of confinement and back into court life. However, Jane's health soon plunged downhill. Many modern historians believed she contracted childbed fever, an infection caused by poor hygiene during labour. However, some suggest other post-birth complications or even food poisoning. On the 24th of October 1537, barely 12 days after giving birth, Jane Seymour died at Hampton Court Palace, and she was just 29 years old. Jane's body lay in state at the Chapel Royal at Hampton Court, and her coffin was then taken to St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle, where she was laid to rest on the 12th of November 1537. Mary served as her stepmother's chief mourner. Henry VIII genuinely grieved for Jane. The court was plunged into mourning, with the rooms of Hampton Court draped in sombre black fabric. The king retreated to Westminster, where he mourned and kept himself close and secret for a while. Following his death in 1547, Henry chose to be buried beside Jane in St. George's Chapel. Jane Seymour is often remembered as Henry's favourite queen, although some historians do argue that her early death denied Henry the chance to find any fault in her. Certainly, she was memorialised with awe and reverence as the mother of his son, and Henry continued to include Jane in family portraits, even after he remarried. The family of Henry VIII, which is a portrait that was done after her death, it was actually completed in 1545, so quite a long time after her death. It actually hangs in Hampton Court Palace, and it is called the family of Henry VIII, and it has Henry as the gentleman that he looks there, Edward as he looked then in 1545, and Jane Seymour as she looked before she died. So just a little bit of detail there. I mean, you're talking 8 years after her death. He's got a picture where she is still his wife because he loved her. I think there's no denying that she was his favourite. She'd always been his favourite. And she was the one that, given the chance, would have remained Queen of England. Jane actually also appears in the Whitehall Memorial, depicted beside Henry and his parents, Henry VII and Elizabeth of York. So it's quite impressive, really, when you think of how little time he actually spent with her. You know, they were married for a year and a half. He maybe spent a couple of years courting her before that, but we don't really know. We don't know because she denied him the ability to court because she wanted to be queen. She wanted to be married to him, not just to be a side piece. And we don't know how long he was actually caught in her for. You know, was he caught in her for years and it was just a charade that she sent it back? Or was she genuinely not with him? Was there no connection there? Which means he only spent a year and a half with her and she was his favourite, bar none. You know, it's I think that painting, and some of you may have seen it. If you haven't seen it, Google it. It's Family of Henry VIII is what it's called, the painting. And it's in Hampton Court Palace. It's actually in what's known as the Haunted Gallery. So like I said, Hampton Court, very, very haunted. In fact, it's somewhere I would quite like to go. I have been once, but I'd quite like to go again. But have a look at this picture and just imagine that this is 8 years after she's died. His son is 8 years old. He is a 45, nearly 50-year-old man. And he has done a portrait where his dead wife, bearing in mind he is married again at this point to another woman, but his dead wife is the one that is cemented in this portrait. So, there we go. That is the story of Jane Seymour, the third wife, a woman whose memory is scattered across Hampton Court. We can see her in a lot of Tudor artwork that's around there. And potentially, I would say inarguably, Henry VIII's favourite wife. So, thank you all for listening. And we shall see you next week with another episode. We're going on to number 4, would you believe? But I just want to have a little quick shout out. I do this every week. I want to say thank you to some of the guys who have rejoined Patreon. There's been a couple who have joined Patreon and rejoined Patreon. It's really, really important to the show with people who are on there. You mean so much to this show. You are the ones that keep me coming back every week. Again, I made this point a few months ago. I'm going to put it into perspective for those of you. When we do these podcasts, it costs me, which isn't a lot, it costs me $12 a month to use the company that I use to upload these onto all the platforms that you listen to, Spotify, Amazon, iTunes, everything that you listen to. I have to pay $12 a month. It's not a lot of money for the privilege. And there are adverts on these shows. These adverts are to make some of the money back so it doesn't actually cost me anything. However, last month, I would just like to put it out there, we made 93 cents. That is correct, 93 cents. And the month before, $2.80. So when I say to you guys that these podcasts don't make money, we're here to do these podcasts because we enjoy it and because we want you guys to listen and learn and interact with us. Patreon is for the people who want to give something back, because although there are adverts on these shows, they don't make any money. That said, I'm finding that it's getting more and more difficult to actually find time to do these podcasts. So, if it wasn't for the people on Patreon, these podcasts wouldn't be going out. That's honest, my opinion, because it's costing me more money to make the podcast than it is to actually do it. When it's money and time, it's a bit taxing, which is why I have put up also a GoFundMe for a new laptop. I believe some of you have already donated, and thank you very much for that. But if you do need the details for that, just let me know, because this is just as an example. I'm currently on 36, 37 minutes on this podcast. It has probably taken maybe 2.5 hours to record this because of the laptop that I'm using, because the equipment that I have, great microphones I have, great sound systems. The laptop is in dire need of improvement. So if you do want to donate to that, that would be massively helpful as well. But like I said, if not, just let me know what we can do for you. But by all means, please message me get in touch. We've got email, which is twihpod@gmail.com. If you've got any information, anything you want to say, or join us on Facebook. And that's This Week in History on Facebook. Over to Patreon. It's $5 a month, and you have no idea how much it means to this show. Thank you for listening.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.